Hi, everyone. Dan Cassidy here. Welcome back to the UBS Market Moves podcast channel. For today, we are back with another episode of Talking Markets with a focus on equities. We are fortunate to have back with us today from our partners at RBA, Richard Bernstein Advisors, Dan Suzuki. Dan serves as Deputy Chief Investment Officer with the firm and has been on the podcast with us here several times prior. So with that, Dan, it's great to have you back with us today. Thank you for spending some time with our listeners, and do look forward to hearing your current thinking on a range of topics.
Yeah, me as well, Dan. Always happy to be on the show. Thanks for having me.
So to get started, Dan, U.S. equities in 2024, it has been a rocky road, so to speak, over the past couple of weeks. But just thinking back to Q1, it has been a strong start. Q1 performance, we did see the S&P 500 having gained over 10%, marking the strongest first quarter gain since back in 2019. So curious to hear your thoughts on the start we've gotten off to, as well as current valuations and whether they're justified.
Yeah, I think, if I look at the valuations for the market today, clearly they're elevated relative to history. And I think that's for, a number of different reasons. Probably the first two reasons are really, have to do with sort of where we've come from. I think the first one is that we've just had a very long economic expansion with only just that brief pandemic pause. And so when times are this good for this long, you tend to just see people get a little bit more optimistic and more willing to take risk in their portfolios. People have more money. People's wages are higher. Things are always better at the end of cycle, near the end of cycles, than they are at the early part of cycles when you've just come through some sort of crisis. I think the second contributing factor, not unrelated to the first, is that we've had this incredibly powerful bull market driven by impressive earnings growth. And so if you just look at the underlying fundamentals, people are excited because growth has been good, profits have been good, and that's essentially what you're buying. So what's really, why would you expect that to change, when it's gone on for so long? Now, I think those two factors have been, big drivers. But there's been sort of two other factors that have really amplified, the spate of bullishness that we've seen. I think the first one has to do with liquidity. If you go back to the pandemic, you had, arguably the biggest policy-driven liquidity that we've ever seen injected into our economy, which really caused, a huge rally in the markets on the back of that liquidity injection. And then over the last year or so, I would argue the baton was passed to a market-driven source of liquidity as people have been, more willing to take risk in markets and more willing to provide capital. And then, just so far this year, it's kind of been a bit of both the policy-driven and market-driven liquidity. So I think that explains sort of the start to the year and the high valuations. I think the very last reason for the high valuations today that you can't really avoid when talking about valuations is simply the excitement about the technological change and innovation that the economy and industries are undergoing. And you can see the impact of those two factors when you go beyond sort of the market level valuations and sort of peel back the layers of the onion. It's really, and this is going to come as a surprise to absolutely nobody, it's a tale of two markets. You have the valuations for the U.S. mega cap growth names, and then you really have everything else. And so, at the market level, you could argue that a lot of those elevated valuations are justified or at least, to be expected given where we've come from. But I would argue that the disparity of valuation seems a bit stretched and, a bit unjustified from that perspective.
It's helpful to have an understanding as to how we got to where we are today with respect to valuations. And as I mentioned, it has been a rough couple of weeks. We have seen equity investors give back some of those gains. So the question becomes, as far as a near-term performance outlook, and that can extend through the first half of 2024, even through year-end, but how do you see performance evolving from here?
Yeah, clearly, as you noted, we had a really, really strong start to the year, and we've really lost quite a bit of steam over the past couple of weeks. I think what's happened this year was the market was rightly responding to the improving growth backdrop, right? If you just look at sort of the leading indicators of growth or even the coincident indicators of growth, over the past almost coming up on a year, you've actually seen, growth really been surprising to the upside and accelerating. And I think that's really, what's this year in particular, what the market was responding to was that better growth that should translate into better earnings. I think, the thing that the market was a bit naive to or oblivious to was the downstream implications of that stronger growth. If you go back to just basic economics, inflation is a lagging indicator, an official lagging indicator, and really is a response or a symptom of demand outstripping supply. So if you really want to know where inflation is going to go outside of supply shocks, you really have to understand that demand story. So it's really growth is the leading indicator and inflation is the lagging indicator. And so I think that's really, what the market was a bit oblivious to was assuming that this disinflationary backdrop would continue, and then you just have growth accelerating. So you get the best of both worlds, a bit of a Goldilocks scenario. Now, if strong growth were pushing inflation up from 1% to 2%, I'd obviously be a very, very different story. But where we sit now, if you look at where inflation's come from, just headline inflation, you're talking about that stronger growth pushing inflation, from 3 to 3.5%, and now potentially higher if that strong growth environment continues. And I think that throws a big wrench into the market's perception of this immaculate disinflation that was allowing the market to react, uniformly positive to strong data for much of the year. Now it's back to being a tug of war between stronger growth and stronger earnings being a positive support for markets, and then the implication of that stronger growth, meaning a tighter Fed and higher rates, and that's going to be tougher for certain stocks. And I think, when you look at that environment, that tug of war between earnings and rates is not going to be the same for every company. And if you look at sort of the performance of markets since the markets peaked, near the end of last quarter, at the end of March, you're actually seeing, commodities are up, commodity producer stocks are up, and countries that benefit from improving commodity production and prices are also doing very well. And so it's been a good time for those types of companies, but obviously for a lot of other companies, those higher commodity prices, the higher interest rates, that's a hit to your margin. So a lot of companies are feeling the pain off of that. So I think understanding that tug of war and who's going to benefit from that tug of war explains a lot of what you've seen since the peak of the markets a couple weeks ago. And likely that dynamic is going to persist as we have this, strong growth environment that's going to continue to put inflationary pressure up here.
Maybe expanding on risk headwinds to performance, you think about everything from geopolitical concerns to perhaps the pace of rate cuts falling short of investor expectations at the start of 2024. But just digging a bit deeper, what's top of mind for you, Dan?
Yeah, I think when you step back from it, I think the most important thing is always going to be earnings. Earnings is essentially that's what you're buying when you invest in markets. And so, so long as earnings growth continues to hum along and accelerate and not roll over, I think the base case should be for the markets to trend higher. So that's the first thing is I'm always, when you think about the risks, you're always looking out for the risk that this environment is changing, that earnings are peaking and potentially starting to roll over. We're just not seeing any of those signs. In fact, I mean, not that earnings are and the economy are one. In fact, they're quite different. But, if you just look right now, by some measures, current GDP is tracking like a full percentage point above where consensus sits, right? So you're continuing to see this strong growth environment. I'm not seeing any shift there. And so at least over the next few quarters, I think that the earnings, support is going to continue to be very strong for markets. But as we've seen over the past 2 or 3 years, the market really tends to hop from narrative to narrative. You know, every 3 months there's almost a new narrative. So the recent narrative is one of optimism, but there are some risks that weren't being factored in there, and I think those risks are lie on both sides. You know, we've kind of been in this Goldilocks, period, this Goldilocks, narrow window where, you know, inflation is less of a problem and growth is doing very well. Well, I think that that's a very narrow window, and I think what the market wasn't factoring in is the risk that you actually move above that window or below that window, which would have negative implications on both sides. And so we already talked about what's happening more recently is that growth is coming in above that window, and that's putting upward pressure on inflation. So the market is just really starting to come around, you know, to the risk that things are potentially too high. And I think there's, you know, potentially further for that to get priced into markets, and that could be a big driver of sort of near-term volatility. Because as we've seen, you know, the market went, the pendulum swung so far, you know, the pricing in more than 6 cuts this year, and now as those get continue to get priced out, and you even start to price in some probability of a Fed hike, you know, the market has to, you know, recognize that the risks associated with that, at least for certain companies. And then obviously, as I alluded to, you know, there's the risk on the downside. You know, we've been in this accelerating growth environment since the middle of last year. I think, you know, just the normal course of cycles, you know, profit cycles tend to run, you know, 12 to 18 months. So at some point, those earnings are going to peak out, comps get tougher, things start to slow, and so you always have to be aware or mindful when those inflection points are happening. Again, we're not seeing those signs, but if we have this conversation, you know, 3 or 4 quarters from now, that's a very real risk to consider, particularly given, you know, that there's going to be this ongoing absorption of these higher rates that we really haven't felt the effects of yet outside of, say, the bottom 20% of households in the U.S. You know, as that creeps higher and that hits the corporate businesses as, in addition to households, in addition to our government, who's really been the only one who's been sort of absorbing the negative impact of higher interest rates, you know, you have to factor in, you know, what the implications are going to be for growth. Obviously, you know, outside of those fundamental risks, the one that the market's going to be keying in on is the upcoming elections, not just in the U.S. but around the world. But you know, for us, we tend to be more focused on, you know, business cycles and profit cycles over political cycles. So that's clearly a driver of potential you know, volatility this year. But I would tend to fade, you know, those knee-jerk market reactions rather than invest based upon them.
From the perspective of an equity investor, there's a lot there to consider. The question becomes, from a positioning standpoint, what to do. So what are you currently recommending, Dan, from RBA in terms of equity positioning, maybe from a sector size and style lens?
Absolutely. I think that, you know, it's sort of like KISS, keep it simple. Yeah. And I'll let you fill in the last word there. But, you know, really, you just got to follow the fundamentals. And as I said, you know, I've already said probably numerous times, it's really all about earnings. And so from a very basic perspective, you want to go where earnings trends are improving the most. And so if you think about that and you apply that to the world today, I think there's a lot of reason for optimism, you know, because while the U.S. profit cycle is sort of becoming more mature as time goes on, you know, outside of the U.S. and outside of U.S. large caps, you know, the world wasn't really participating in this earnings broadly, in this earnings acceleration. So I think the key point now is that you are starting to see more and more signs of broadening out of growth. And so you're seeing that breadth really happen across sizes within the U.S., across regions geographically, and across sectors. And so I think as growth broadens out, you know, that's going to get reflected, and you could argue has already been starting to get reflected over the past, you know, couple months into improving and broadening out of performance. And so, you know, when you think about that, where are earnings, you know, starting to accelerate here? Well, from a size perspective, I think, you know, small cap earnings look to be troughing, And over the course of the next 2, 3, 4 quarters, you could actually see a much bigger acceleration in small caps than you're seeing in large caps. You know, as you move geographically around the world, while Europe and Japan, you know, may be peaking or already have peaked in terms of their profit cycles, emerging markets are actually just starting to broadly pick up and accelerate. And some of that's going to be boosted by not just the pickup in global growth, but also sort of that upward pressure on inflation that we already discussed, as a lot of those are commodity producers. And so, you know, I'd say small caps, the earnings are now turning supportive, where they've been headwinds so far. Same is true with emerging markets. And then from a sector perspective, you know, I tend to have a preference for, you know, late cycle cyclicals, which tend to be, you know, less cheaper in valuations relative to the market, and they tend to be bigger beneficiaries of that sort of late cycle upward inflationary pressure that you're seeing. That's going to benefit, as I said before, there's sort of a tug of war between the positive benefit of inflation on earnings and the negative effect of higher rates. Well, it's the late cycle cyclicals that tend to thrive in that environment. And the thing that underpins all of those different forms of cyclicality, whether it's small caps, emerging markets, or late cycle cyclicals, is that they're all, you know, pretty reasonably valued or outright cheap relative to the market. So I think you're getting strong earnings fundamentals, and you're getting them at cheap valuations. I mean, that's kind of the holy grail opportunity that you're always striving for within markets.
Outside of the U.S., Dan, any stories as far as regions within either developed markets or emerging markets that stand out to you? Anything you're tracking at the moment?
Yeah, I think as I noted, you know, big swaths of international developed markets are, you know, their earnings have been actually quite resilient or outright strong over the last couple of years, but now those earnings are actually just starting to peak or peaked a couple of quarters ago. So I think that, you know, that's one of the reasons we reduced our exposure to the likes of Europe and Japan, simply for that reason, because we see other areas of the world that are seeing that, you know, pick up in earnings growth. And so I think emerging markets broadly are seeing that supportive earnings trend, whether obviously emerging markets tend to be dominated by China. We think that their earnings growth will continue to accelerate as they have been for some time. But I think that earnings growth is really broadening out. And so whether it's LATAM or the rest of emerging Asia, I think those are all big beneficiaries of this sort of improving and broadening out of the global profit cycle.
Well, Dan, we've covered a lot of ground for our listeners and do appreciate the insights and guidance when it comes to positioning. Before we wrap up, anything you would like to reinforce or anything in the way of final thoughts or takeaways you would like to leave with our listeners?
Yeah, I guess the only thing I would say that we didn't dive as far into was, you know, I said, you know, keep it simple. Just follow where the relative earnings trends are improving. If you think about relative earnings, you know, you could argue that was a big reason, you know, for the dominance of the U.S. mega cap growth names, right? Their earnings troughed earlier and accelerated much faster, you know, than the rest of the market. So to that extent, you know, the narrowness of the market was justified by the narrowness of earnings fundamentals. But as you look here and look forward, you know, there's clearly a shift as their earnings growth, the mega cap's earnings growth has begun to inflect lower, and that should continue for most of this year, as really everything else, not exactly everything else, but all those other areas of the market that I mentioned, their earnings are just starting to accelerate. And so if you were to take, like, you know, whether it's ACWI, which is the global stock market earnings, or you take the U.S. S&P earnings, and you look at their forecast the analysts have penciled in, they are set to accelerate over the course of this year. Well, if they're accelerating and the mega cap growth names are decelerating, you know, that clearly implies that there's a baton being passed. And what's going to drive, you know, the earnings acceleration from here is sort of the rest of the S&P 500, which I think is incredibly bullish and incredibly necessary, you know, for the sustainability of the bull market. Bull markets are broad. And I think now that you're seeing that the fundamentals broaden out, people should be excited. You know, that's going to translate into, you know, performance broadening out. So I think that's sort of the one add-on to everything else we already talked about.
Well, Dan, thank you very much for your time today. Always a pleasure having you on and hearing your perspective when it comes to markets and positioning. We shall see how conditions evolve in the months to come. And I do look forward to having a follow-up conversation at some point with you again soon.
Looking forward to it. Thanks, Dan.
As a firm providing wealth management services to clients, UBS Financial Services, Inc. offers investment advisory services in its capacity as an SEC-registered investment advisor and brokerage services in its capacity as an SEC-registered broker-dealer. Investment advisory services and brokerage services are separate and distinct, differ in material ways, and are governed by different laws and separate arrangements. It is important that you understand the ways in which we conduct business and that you carefully read the agreement and disclosures that we provide to you about the products or services we offer. For more information, please review client relationship summary provided at ubs.com/relationship summary or ask your UBS financial advisor for a copy.